time now for hour number two of this weekend's two-hour installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and of course the host of the program is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick off this hour with Carol Marks in conversation with Don Mitchell. He's a novelist, essayist, and sometimes screenwriter, and he's going to talk about his new book titled Flying Blind, One Man's Adventures Battling Buckthorn, Making Peace with Authority, and Creating a Home for Endangered Bats. It's published by Chelsea Green Publishing.
You're a hippie who protects the Vietnam War. What happened to you as a result of becoming a conscientious objector and being unwilling to go to Vietnam?
Well, I think, like many people in my generation, I acquired a deep distrust of government, and that kind of became generalized to I believe that I fashioned my adult life out of rebellion against authority, but I came to realize as I wrote this book that it wasn't authority that I was so angry at, but authoritarian personalities and institutions. And I believe that's a generational phenomenon.
Absolutely. Now, moving along with your life experiences, how did your former experiences with the government lead you and your wife to go to Vermont in the 70s and settle on a farm? And what were you hoping to find by living on the farm and off the land?
Oh, we were classic members of the Back to the Land movement at a certain point in the counterculture's history. In fact, the Whole Earth Catalog, in one of its last editions, had printed a sidebar that urged all the long-haired, disaffected young people to move to Vermont because, it said, this is a very small state, so we could take it over quickly. And I looked at my wife and said, you know, let's give that a try. And actually, if one thinks about Vermont's cultural history, the influx of young people in the early 1970s, many of whom stayed here, actually did change the state's cultural complexion.
You know, that's so interesting. And you then became a shepherd for a flock of sheep. You had a 150-acre farm. And, you know, I was amazed in reading your book to find out, you know, what states and what governments give money for, because sometimes it's kind of crazy. But anyway, they gave you money for your sheep because they were producing wool that was used for military uniforms.
Yes, it was held at a certain time that you could not produce a decent uniform without wool. And so the U.S. government needed to have a captive domestic wool supply.
You know, and then, of course, as with everything, the global wool market, you know, kind of collapsed, had a bubble there, and you found yourself also at that time you wanted to retire from your job as a creative writing professor at Middlebury College. And all of a sudden, the government in Vermont, again, offered to pay you some money, but this time it was for a different thing, to make zones in your forest that would offer bats better places to live in and forage. So what did they offer you? Because that was kind of strange. And did you even like bats? Because they're not my favorite things, I'll tell you.
In the summer of 2006, I was approached by a wildlife biologist working for the state of Vermont, and he asked if he could spend a night trying to trap bats in the woods on our farm. Certain features of the terrain made him believe that he would be successful, and he was quite successful, and he and his team even trapped a couple of pregnant female Indiana bats, and Indianas had been endangered since 1967. So that was quite an event, although it didn't really register with me what the implications were at the time. But I knew that if you have a federally endangered mammal living in habitat that you own, it's going to have implications. The following winter, the first reports of white nose syndrome, a fungal disease that turned out to be of European origin, which kills bats as they hibernate in caves during the winter. The first reports came out of Albany, New York. And by the following year, the disease had spread to Vermont and Massachusetts. And by now, it's spread to 22 states and 5 provinces of Canada, killing an estimated 7 million bats so far. And so bats were on the government's radar screen. They occupy an important ecological niche, and single bat can eat a couple thousand insects on a summer night, and those are insects that would otherwise be impacting upon our lives by eating crops, by defoliating trees, by giving us mosquito bites, and so forth.
And also, don't bats form another important thing because they pollinate
other plants?
I think that I have a much better feeling for bats after reading your book because, you know, you thought of them as flying rats. I just thought that they were unpleasant creatures because they were flying around. But, you know, they do serve such a useful purpose. So when the government, you know, said clear your forests and make it more habitable for bats to forage and rest, you went to do that. But it was very hard work because you had to get rid of some really invasive plants that are practically impossible to get rid of. And one was a glossy buckthorn.
Buckthorn, yes.
Yep. And you know what amazed me was the way they suggested getting rid of it. I mean, wasn't it like poisoning the forest to get rid of something that was...
The government said you're not going to eradicate this particular invasive unless you paint the stumps with a broad-spectrum herbicide. The generic is glyphosate, most commonly sold under the brand name Roundup. And the stumps had to be painted within 5 minutes of when the trees, the buckthorn plants, particularly in the small trees, of when they were cut down, and only during the fall of the year when the plant is moving nutrients from its leaves and branches down into the root system. And I'd never used any sort of herbicide on our farm in 40 years. But the contract basically required that I use this, and if I didn't fulfill the contract's requirements to the government's satisfaction, I was going to have to pay them some money for wasting their time, as opposed to having them pay me an embarrassingly small amount of money for hundreds and hundreds of hours of work. So I did what the government said.
And you related it to painting this very strong poison on the stumps in a way to what was said by Vietnam Army spokesperson, and more than one person said it at that time, and that was to save a village, it was necessary to destroy it.
Right.
That's a little
bit
hard to understand.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to bang on the government too hard. I mean, I've mellowed them since the 1960s, and there are certain kinds of problems that only government is going to be able to deal with effectively. I mean, who else is going to identify a rogue event in the ecosystem such as the arrival of white nose syndrome killing millions of bats and then have some kind of programmatic way to respond to it? It's going to take something like a government to do that. And with government, you're going to get bureaucracy. You're going to get a degree of red tape. You're going to get different agencies who have overlapping areas of authority and consequent turf wars. That's just the nature of the system, of the business. And yet, at the end of the day, this project was successful because the biologists came back and spent another night here in the summer of 2012, and they were trapping healthy bats despite the inroads of white nose syndrome, and they even trapped another pregnant female Indiana bat, and these are now as scarce as hen's teeth. But the habitat enhancement effort that I spent 3 years doing, I'm not going to say I saved the bats, but I certainly didn't hurt them.
And also you learned, you know, that the kind of authority that uses expert knowledge to help, that's not such a bad thing. There are different kinds of authority, and that kind is a better one.
I came to see that authentic authority commands someone's respect just because of the sheer expertise and the generosity with which that expertise is shared. But authoritarian individuals and institutions, they don't command respect, they demand respect, and that's an entirely different thing.
And that's a very good way to put it. Now, getting back to the white nose syndrome, do you think, as some people do, that this is a, you know, deadly phenomenon that really evolution plays a role in? And maybe the bats that survive the white nose syndrome are going to be stronger and healthier.
Oh, yes. And 2 or 3 years ago, as I was in the thick of this habitat work, I never saw a bat. And nobody else was seeing bats either. I mean, they were just taken down by this. But in any infectious disease scenario, that's what initially happens. And then eventually the population gets winnowed to some cohort that either have some resistance or have some behavioral strategies or know something that allows them to cope with it. And now this summer we began seeing bats again as a common event in the evening. And I'm not the only one who can say that. I'm convinced that any bat in Vermont by now has been exposed to white-nose syndrome. And the ones who are with us are the ones who can somehow cope. And they can now begin to rebuild their populations. But it's going to take a long time because a female bat only has a single pup per summer. And only half of bats are females. So some of these species, we believe, had taken a 90% hit in their former population. It could take them 100 years to rebuild those populations.
Now, I also understand that you have some beehives on your farm, and the bees have been dying, and again, like the bats and the white-nose syndrome, we don't know why. Do you think that, do you know anything more about it? Because you actually have some colonies on your farm.
Well, the colonies are kept by a rather controversial and nationally known beekeeper whose name is Kirk Webster. He has nearly 1,000 hives, and about 20 are on our farm. And his feeling about colony collapse disorder or whatever is killing the bees is that he should do nothing except to save the hives and requeen from the hives that can tolerate whatever is going on. And the alternatives involve using fumigants in the hives and antibiotics and other, you know, human medicinal chemical measures. And the varroa mite or whatever the parasite is that's involved in this, they very quickly adapt to whatever fumigant is being used. So every year a stronger fumigant has to be used, and someone's making money on this. But ultimately, he believes, you want the hives to have some natural means of coping with it. And as a consequence of this, he's able to sell queens across North America with some confidence that they have some resistance to colony collapse disorder. So his philosophy is to go with the healthy hives and do nothing else. And you know, I haven't done anything to solve white-nose syndrome, and I can't. But I have enhanced the habitat here in a way that will be a benefit to the bats who discover they can cope with it.
Don Mitchell, in conversation with Carol Marks. His book is titled Flying Blind, One Man's Adventures in Battling Buckthorn, Making Peace with Authority, and Creating a Home for Endangered Bats. It's published by Chelsea Green Publishing. And I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Carol Marks. I'm Michael Harrison. Our senior correspondent Richard Neer joins us the rest of the way. That's coming up next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them.
Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. If you want to know more about Carol Marks or hear some of the best shows in our archives, go to our website. It's atouchofgray.com, and we spell gray with an E. Let's continue now with the program. Richard Neer, front and center. Our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, in conversation now with Kate Edwards. She's the daughter of former Senator John Edwards and Elizabeth Edwards. And she's going to offer advice for families and loved ones of those facing advanced breast cancer.
Kate, thank you for joining us. And obviously with your mother's situation, when did you become aware that this could be hereditary, this could be genetic, this could be something that you really needed to look into?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's something that her doctors actually advised her about. She was tested for the gene and it tested negative. But I would say this, I don't think it even matters whether you are someone who has it in the family or not. It's really important that we all be really, really cautious to make sure we get our screenings, make sure we get our mammograms, because early detection is absolutely an important piece of preventing breast cancer. My mom, of course, was diagnosed with early stage breast cancer in 2004, and then again in 2007 with advanced breast cancer, which is a very different disease, and it's a disease that presents a lot of different challenges that are very unique to the advanced breast cancer community.
So the advanced was not an outcropping of the earlier diagnosis. This was something totally different.
No, the advanced breast cancer is metastatic breast cancer. So when the cancer moved from her breast to her bone, it became advanced breast cancer. And at that point, it was no longer curable, but it was treatable. But that meant, of course, that she knew she would be living with advanced breast cancer for the rest of her life. The early stage breast cancer, we went into aggressive treatments and kind of dropped everything, focused on getting her cured. With advanced breast cancer, that, of course, was not an option, getting her cured. So it was about managing the disease, and we lived with a lot of uncertainty about how long she had left. So it was about making those days really count, making those days matter.
And obviously, it's not just a strain on the person with it, but it's a strain on the caregivers. It's very, very difficult. There are good days and there are bad days. Talk about the kind of care that has to be given, and I guess maybe the patience that has to be involved in terms of handling this situation.
Well, like I said, advanced breast cancer can be a very long-term disease, so it's important that caregivers pay attention to their own needs as well as the needs of the patient. For me, it is a day-to-day thing, and it's all about doing what the patient needs on that given day. There were days where my mom woke up with tons of energy and she wanted to go outlet shopping for 10 hours, and then there were days where she was kind of tired or sore or her back was bothering her. And those days we just popped popcorn and stayed in bed and watched HGTV. So it can be a day-to-day thing, and it's about communicating with the patient and how they're feeling and making sure that I understood what my mom was going through each day. At the same time, and I think it's really important for caregivers to do that and to be part of that. But at the same time, what we do focus a lot on the patient and the patient's needs and forget about ourselves. And my mom constantly reminded me, don't forget about yourself. make sure you're getting the help and the support that you need. And I didn't do a great job at taking that advice, but I would say for any caregiver out there, it is really important that you pay attention to your own needs and the support that you need throughout this process, because it can be a long process. It can be a very emotionally difficult one. And now, actually, the Countess Know Us, Join Us program has put together a hub of resources, not just for patients, but also for caregivers, at advancedbreastcancercommunity.org. So I would urge all the caregivers out there to go and check that out and see what they can learn.
Yeah, and there are, as you say, support groups for caregivers, local support groups, which I imagine you have links to on that website, where you can actually find people who are in similar situations, and it can certainly make it a bit easier to know that there are others in that same spot.
Absolutely. It's important not to feel isolated, for anyone in the advanced breast cancer community to understand that there are a lot of other people out there going through exactly what you're going through. So advancedbreastcancercommunity.org has information and resources that have to do with coping and with grief, the emotional aspect that you're talking about, as well as some practical elements like logistics, getting food in the fridge, getting mom to the doctor's appointment, and some medical advice in terms of, not medical advice, but advice about how to deal with the medical questions that come up, information about the disease, as well as here's some questions that you can ask. Here's how to get the most out of your doctor's appointment. And all of those are pieces of being a caregiver. And I think it's important for caregivers to have a place to go, that they know they can find whatever resource it is that they need on that given day.
In terms of the disease, even though they have not found a cure, there is some hope on the horizon. We keep reading almost daily different types of therapies that they're trying. So hopefully there will be a cure in the not too distant future.
Absolutely. I think that's our greatest hope. And in the meantime, for people living with advanced breast cancer, there's new research, there's new drugs developed every day. And I just wish all the men and women out there living with advanced breast cancer to continue to have that hope, and also to live each day to its fullest, which would be my mom's advice.
That's Kate Edwards, the daughter of former U.S. Senator John Edwards and Elizabeth Edwards, in conversation with Richard Neer. And if you'd like more information, visit advancedbreastcancercommunity.org. That's advancedbreastcancercommunity.org. Richard Neer returns for more conversation when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. GrayTouchOfGray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and it's time for the rest of the way for us to be joined by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who just a few moments from now will be speaking with Governor Tommy Thompson, who served as the HHS secretary back in the early 2000s. He's a former four-term governor of Wisconsin, and he's going to be talking to Richard about the value of providing prescription drugs to Medicare beneficiaries. So, Richard, you spoke to Tommy Thompson. I guess governors have names that are symmetrical.
Chris Christie, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
I can't think of any others, although they probably were. Cal Coolidge.
Cal Coolidge. It's a little bit before my time.
Up here in Massachusetts, a lot of people forget that they don't forget here. A lot of people are in the country, though, but here we know. Calvin Coolidge was once the mayor of a local town near our headquarters at Talkers Magazine, Northampton, Massachusetts. He was the mayor, and then he went on to be governor of Massachusetts, and then went on to the presidency.
Well, the funny thing is, James Polk, who was president at one time, there's a little town in North Carolina called Pineville, and I go there to shop. There's shopping centers and everything. Then you take this little back road, and it goes James Polk Memorial thing. I go, well, what are they doing about Jim? He was born there. He was born in a little log cabin like Abe Lincoln and went to school there and went on to become president.
What's his name? James K. Polk. I think it was K. I don't know why. You know, the presidents that are
Murray the K.
James the K. You know, I know there was Chester A. Arthur.
Arthur, that's right.
You know, you name the presidents that are famous for not being famous. like Millard Fillmore. If you were to ask people who's the most unfamous president of all, everybody would say Millard Fillmore. And
no, but no, because of the Fillmore East and West named after him.
But that definitely brought him a higher level of credibility, especially when the Allman Brothers played there. That's what the A stood for. Oh, no, he was Millard, not Chester A. Arthur. But there were presidents that, you know, like my great-great-great-grandfather, William Henry Harrison. His grandson, my great... I'm only kidding, folks. I'm not related to them. Benjamin Harrison was the grandson of William Henry Harrison, I do believe.
But do you know who they are related to? The Pawn Stars. If you go back far enough,
yeah,
the Harrison family, they're related somehow.
Do you believe that? Do you believe that? Come on. Are you going to believe?
I think they're related to Chumley.
A pawn guy. You know what? You know, I got to tell you something. It's time for an artistic editorial opinion. That show has gone over the deep end. It has jumped the shark. It used to be good, but now they're all stars. They really are stars. And they're all so full of themselves. They become caricatures of themselves.
Well, you know, what's happened is, rather than the good parts of it, where they bring in these rare items and they say if they're fake or they're real, you know, the Antiques Roadshow part of it, now they've got these side stories going mm-hmm. about Chumley's car or the dog
right.
or their Christmas party or something. And it's like, well, I don't really care about their lives so much. I want to know about these items.
Well, that's because you pursue education. A lot of people just watch it because they like to see what goes on in the parking lot behind the pawn shop. but the fact of the matter is that even on that show where they have historical items, the whole thing seems like a total setup now. Who's going to bring a brand, a pristine original guitar owned by Les Paul to a pawn shop because they need a couple of bucks? I mean, people are not going to bring some of these items. I have an original document written by John Hancock that he signed right before the Declaration of Independence. You're going to bring it to a pawn shop?
If you see, I think what that is that reeks of A, desperation, like I need money and I need it now. And if I took it to auction or I tried other ways of getting it, it would take a while to get my money. Or B, they're so enamored with the show and the idea that they're going to be on camera and they could be kind of mini celebrities by selling this that they decide to take a little bit less money so that they get the fame. What do you think?
I don't think so. I think that they actually go out and find these things and it's totally set up. And again, ladies and gentlemen, listening to this, I have no basis of this. This is just my gut impression. I have no research or any sources to say that what I'm saying is true. Just as a viewer, I get the feeling it's a total setup.
Well, I'll tell you, most reality shows are set up. Like some of those House Hunter shows, they've already bought a house, mm-hmm. and they're just going back over their thing, and they look at a couple of other houses that they're clearly not considering.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to somebody who was a real estate agent who was on that show, and they said, oh, yeah, well, the whole thing was kind of set up.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously set up because, you know, where are the tents and the cameras and the coffee and the commissary and all the lights and, you know, they give me a break. But it's good TV. It's good TV if that's what you like. And I have to admit to liking a certain element and a certain aspect of these shows. We've got to take a break. We're going to hear you talk to Tommy Thompson, and then we're going to come back. I want to ask you about the blackout rule in football. That's something that came up this past couple of weeks, and I'm not quite sure how it works, and maybe you do. So Richard Neer is with us. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, will continue in just a moment.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and now as promised, here's our senior correspondent Richard Neer in conversation with former Governor Tommy Thompson. He served as Health and Human Services Secretary from 2001 to 2005. He's former four-term governor of Wisconsin, and he's going to talk to Richard about the value of providing prescription drugs to Medicare beneficiaries.
You know, with all the controversy with the Affordable Care Act and the problems rolling it out and everything else, we look at Medicare Part D, and you were very instrumental in putting that one together. It's working very well, isn't it?
It certainly is, Richard, and thank you very much for having me on the Touch of Gray, a very successful program across America. And that is what took place 10 years ago. There was a very huge controversy over whether or not seniors should be covered with their meds. And the Bush administration said they should be, and the president tasked me, to get it passed. We were able to get it passed through Congress on a bipartisan basis. Both Democrats and Republicans supported Part D. It was controversial, but we were able to roll it out by educating America and testing and retesting it. And the beauty of the program 10 years later is that 90%, just think of this, Richard, 90% of the seniors of America have signed up for it on a voluntary basis, and over 90% say, this is a very good, successful program, and I just can't tell you how pleased I am. And the other great things about it is that the cost estimates which were originally put out, we are 45% less than what those cost estimates said we would be, and we're saving the seniors, and of course that is a big part of your audience, 50% on their premiums, which was originally estimated to be. So overall, a successful program that costs less and is treating Americans and our seniors better, and we're saving those individuals from going to the hospital and going to nursing homes and being able to preventing surgery because they're able to get their medicines and paid for by the government. It's a great program.
Now, refresh our memories. It was 10 years ago. So was the initial rollout smooth? Was it used with computers the way it is now? Because so much of it is the website. Was there a lot of website stuff then, or was it basically on the telephone and by mail and the so-called conventional methods when it rolled out?
No, Richard, it was mainly by websites. It, you know, at that time it was the beginning. And there's no question there were some glitches, but the glitches were not on the rollout so much as the fact that we were rewarded by so many insurance companies coming in and wanting to be part of the program. If you remember correctly, we had more plans, and it was difficult to educate everybody about the different plans. Once we were able to do that and simplify the coverage plans so the seniors of America could understand them better and be able to pick the right one for them, it has turned out to be hugely successful across America. And I couldn't be more pleased and happier to where we are today.
Now, Governor, has the system evolved since it started? I remember one of the controversies in the beginning was the so-called donut hole. Has that been modified somewhat?
Yes, it's been modified. There have been improvements made on Part D all the way along. The donut hole has been modified. It's being closed, which is a step in the right direction. There's one more thing that needs to be done, Richard, and that is to have Medicare Part D cover obesity. The American Medical Association came out this past summer and said obesity is a disease. They never did that before. And over one-third of Americans, including a lot of elderly, are overweight. And for several reasons, you know, people say, well, they can eat properly and they can exercise and reduce it. Not everybody can. Their metabolic system, the metabolism in each individual is different. And we need to be able to cover them because we will save the system a lot of money. The obesity is costing America $190 billion a year. It's leading to heart disease and defects, strokes, and most importantly, the big epidemic of all, diabetes.
Okay, now we understand all those things about obesity, but when you say cover obesity, what specifically are you referring to that insurance can do?
Well, we're talking about medicines, we're talking about consultation, we're talking about surgery, and education. All of those coming together can treat obesity. Just right now, Richard, the experts project that people on Part D are saving the system about $1,200 per person for not going into the hospital for hypertension or heart attacks or strokes because they're taking their meds, not going into nursing homes as soon or as long because they're taking their meds, and not having surgery. And that is, they figure, the experts project that because of Part D, we're saving about an additional $1,200. Just think what we could do if we were able to get a big percent of those one-third Americans who are obese under control and be able to reduce obesity diseases, but also improve their quality of health, therefore their quality of life.
Well, at the expense of seeming irreverent here, you are a Republican, and a lot of your colleagues, how do you convince them to go along with actually expanding Part D, even though, as you say, it probably will save money? How is this going to be done politically?
Well, first off, the only way you can do it politically is on a bipartisan basis. That's why Part D was successful. It was under a bipartisan basis, and right now, the Treat and Reduce Obesity Act has 60 co-sponsors, both in the House and the United States Senate, both Democrats and Republicans. I am very confident that those individuals on a bipartisan basis can see the opportunity to save the Medicare system a lot of money if we get obesity under control. That's what it's all about, saving money and improving the quality of health of individuals.
So by adding obesity, premiums would not go up initially?
Oh, sure. Every time you add something, you got to expect that the premiums would more likely have to go up. But the truth of the matter is, the obesity in America is costing the system $190 billion. We will save money. We will save money by investing a small amount. We will save big dollars by investing a few dollars.
Former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson in conversation with Richard Neer. And Richard will be back to talk a bit about football and the blackouts that television infringes upon those people who are unfortunate enough to live in a community where the game didn't sell out. Kind of an interesting thing. That's coming up next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
For almost every American worker, Social Security is part of the plan for a secure retirement. It's important to know how the program works. If you have questions, the answers are easy to find when you visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Use the retirement estimator to get a benefit estimate. Browse our frequently asked questions. You can even apply for benefits online. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov to figure out your retirement plan. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we come to the final segment of our big two-hour weekend get-together, and we continue to be joined by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. Richard Neer is also among the many things he does in the media. He is an expert on sports. He's a sports talk show host in New York. And Richard, diving into that pool of your knowledge, what is the story with the blackout rule with the NFL? I don't get it. I heard it happened again recently that they actually black out the televised aspects of a game if they don't sell out all the tickets.
Yeah. Well, back in the 70s, they passed a rule in the FCC, and I had always thought this was just NFL policy. Mm-hmm. But apparently they got it through a rule in the FCC that if the game was not sold out within 72 hours before, the game could not be televised to the local market. And the idea was, well, we're protecting the fact that we want people to come to the games because that's where the guys make their money. And if you give them away for free, they won't come to the games and the NFL will lose money. Well, as we know now, the NFL prints money. They don't lose money. Mm-hmm. And it has become, as you and I were talking a couple of weeks ago, a studio game where they make much more money on the TV contracts than they make in ticket sales. Mm-hmm. And people pay lots of money to build stadiums, taxpayers, even if they don't fork over the money for the stadium itself, they put the roads in, they give the infrastructure, they give them tax breaks. So the average person, a chunk of their money is going to these teams, and it seems patently unfair that it gets blacked out for the local fan, the dyed-in-the-wool fan, who can't afford to go to a game because tickets are so expensive now.
Yeah, plus, aren't these people valuable to the commercial buyers, to the advertisers, as viewers? You know,
oh, absolutely.
They could computer generate the fans. They could make it like in Gladiator, you know, where the stands are full. They could make them do what they want. It would be just as good.
But people watching on TV, the idea is, well, someday they will go to the game, or they buy the merchandise, they support the team, they support it in other ways other than just buying tickets.
I want to say one thing. I went to a game, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, I went to an NFL game, first time in over 30 years. You know, I'm a big fan, I watch it on TV every weekend, I love watching football. Going to the game is a very different experience than watching it on TV. I had a very good time. I enjoyed it very much, but it's not something that is as pleasant as sitting on your couch watching it on television. It is better on TV. The football experience is better on TV. The going to the game is a different kind of football-esque adventure. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the things you realize going to the game, don't you, is how long the commercial breaks are and how frequent they are.
Yes, but there are cheerleaders, and there are people running around, and there are people doing contests and kicking the ball through the things. I went to see the Celtics the other night in Boston. I couldn't believe how much stuff goes on during the commercials. There are dancers and people throwing each up in the air and clowns, and it's a lot of fun, actually.
The contests and things. Yeah, that's all part of the NBA experience.
But then again, you know, from pure standpoint, I can't imagine how the players and the coaches concentrate on the game with all of this distraction happening around them. And I don't understand it. It just, there's something about that takes away from the seriousness of the game for its own sake. You get 10 seconds. Yay, nay.
Oh, I agree. Like baseball, where they have the little things between innings on the scoreboard, and instead of just being able to talk to your person next to you about the pitching change that was or wasn't made.
And the incessant noise. Oh,
yes.
Richard, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Beverly Santinello, our producer on the front line, putting it all together.
Richard Neer, our senior correspondent, and Steve Wiseman, Kevin Casey. And, of course, the host of the program, the founder of the program, Carol Marks, we so appreciate you. Happy New Year, everybody. This has been our first program of the new year, and we hope we have many more and that we all have a good year. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend for another two-hour episode in the amazing adventures of A Touch of Grey.